Don't let diaper rash come between you and your baby. Diaper rash can be one of the worst experiences your little one has to go through. Keeping their delicate skin healthy and happy shouldn't require a spatula to apply thick and goopy treatments that can be just as irritating and uncomfortable. When my oldest was little, she would get the worst diaper rash. It left me feeling so desperate to help her while also wanting something gentle on her skin. Dr. Mom Butt Balm is a pediatrician-approved skin protectant free of dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide. It was developed by a mom who is also a doctor. When she couldn't find any traditional products that worked for her baby's persistent diaper rash, she let nothing get in her way. You can use just a small amount of Dr. Mom Butt Balm to help soothe your baby's skin and feel confident that you are making the right choice. Dr. Mom is committed to providing an ultra-premium formula for moms that won't settle when it comes to their little ones. Soothe and restore with active ingredients being dimethicone and petrolatum. You can find more about Dr. Mom Butt Balm at drmombuttbalm.com or find it on Amazon or walmart.com.
Hello, hello, you guys. This is Megan with the VBAC link. I apologize. I sound a little hoarse today. I have totally caught a darn bug. I've been trying to get away with it all year, not getting sick. And apparently I couldn't get away with it. So here I am. I sound kind of froggy today, but that's okay. We're still gonna carry on. You guys, we have our friend Abby with us today, and I'm really, really excited because I was just telling her before we started recording, like she's just a big ball of everything. She's got a lot of amazing things to talk about and to share. And so it is such an honor, Abby, to have you on our podcast.
I'm so excited to be here.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And I want to just kind of talk a little bit, even before we jump into the review, and I don't want to talk too much about your story because I want to give you all the time. But have you guys heard Baby Got VBAC? Have you guys heard of that book? If you haven't, go check our highlights or on our blog, because we have it on there. And it is such an incredible, uplifting book. And guess what, Abby? I don't know if you know this. I don't know if you actually were the one that contacted us. But forever ago, someone contacted Julie and I about being in this. And we like had so much going on. I think we were like in our course. And we were like, we can't take anything more on. And we like declined the opportunity. And now we're like kicking ourselves in the pants. We're like, dang it. We should have been in this incredible book because it has so many incredible people and stories and information in it. I mean, it's amazing, right? Do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yes. So yeah, Baby Got VBAC. I don't even exactly know what is the subheader. It's like a collection of wisdom for better birth after cesarean.
Yeah, an inspiring collection of wisdom for better births after a cesarean.
And it was the brainchild from a VBAC mom herself, but who's also a writer and an independent publisher. So she just got us all together, you know, found us likely through various social media channels as things are done these days.
Yes, yes.
And yeah, it's a combination of, you know, VBAC stories from all different kinds of people, as well as just some awesome chapters are done by various birth professionals. So, you know, some birth educators, some doulas, some chiropractors, PTs.
Brittany, right. Brittany is in it, and we love Brittany. I've taken her course. Yeah. She's on our podcast. She's in it. Brittany Sharp. Yeah.
Yeah. Her chapter is awesome. So even though the stories are all VBAC stories, I mean, really a VBAC is a first time, you know, going through the whole process and having a successful, you know, vaginal birth. So I also think it's a great resource for first-time parents who haven't necessarily had a cesarean in their past as well. But of course, it's awesome for if you're preparing for a VBAC.
Yeah. And I love that you touched on that. You know, we talk about this on the podcast. Like, this is a VBAC-specific podcast, right? Like, we discuss vaginal birth after cesarean. But all of us on this podcast, I'm telling you, like, except for maybe the providers, or people who haven't had a cesarean, but all of us were in that spot of preparing and had these cesareans, right? Mm-hmm. And it is a way to learn how to avoid a cesarean, your options for birth, your options for location, mm-hmm. and all of that. And so, yes, it is VBAC specific, but it is just like this book. It is for all parents that are expecting and working and wanting to learn and grow their education. So I love this book. It's amazing. And it's so fun to have you today on the podcast. Before we jump in, of course, we have a review of the week. So I want to hurry and review this, and then I will introduce you.
Sounds good.
Okay, guys, this actually came in 12 days ago via email. And this is from our friend Jessica. And she says, "Hello, VBAC Link. I wanted to write about my appreciation of the VBAC Link podcast. I had a C-section September 2020 due to arrest of descent. It definitely affected my postpartum mental health. When I found out about being pregnant in July 2022, I Googled VBAC resources and found your podcast. I signed up for your emails, read your blogs, your Instagram, Facebook page stories, and listened to your podcast on my morning jogs and walks. I cried. I smiled. I empathized with the moms telling their stories and, more importantly, learned so much. I followed many of the tips from you and the moms on 314, which was like not that long ago from the day that I am reading this today. I was on my morning walk listening to the last VBAC Link episode and switched to my birth music playlist. 5 minutes later, I started having contractions. After getting home and calling my doula, my husband, and took me to the hospital, or sorry, after calling my doula, my husband took me to the hospital, and I was able to achieve my VBAC and had a baby girl. Thank you for setting up this resource. I will continue to listen to the stories, even though I don't plan on having more children. I love the stories, the information, and all the passion for helping women like me. Thank you, Jess." Oh my gosh. Jessica, congratulations on your VBAC. And a little part of me is so happy that we got to be a part of your birthing day. Like, that is so awesome that you were listening to these amazing stories and went into labor. So congratulations, Jessica. And yes, just like Jessica, you guys can too. You can VBAC too. And just like she said, we have blogs, Instagram, Facebook. We even have a private Facebook group. So if you're looking for a special space that is protected and filled with people just like you wanting to learn more about your options for birth after cesarean, head over to Facebook and search the VBAC Link community, answer the questions, and then we will get you in so you can start learning.
You are tuned into the VBAC Link podcast with Megan Heaton, who is a longtime doula and VBAC mom herself, here to help you get inspired for birth after having had a C-section. Along with this podcast, the VBAC Link offers blogs, resources, and a comprehensive VBAC course for both parents preparing for birth and doulas wanting to take their VBAC education to the next level. Be sure to follow Megan and her team on all social media platforms for even more. Although these podcast episodes are VBAC specific, it is encouraged for all expectant moms to listen and educate themselves on how to avoid a C-section from the get-go. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other qualified medical professional. Here is your host, Megan.
Hi guys, Megan here. I'm not sure if you knew, but I'm a vaginal birth after two cesarean mama myself. Preparing for my VBAC was tough due to the lack of evidence-based info back then, along with where to find it. Which is why I, along with Julie, created this podcast and our signature course, How to VBAC. The course is self-paced, so you can watch it whenever your kiddos are sleeping or even at school. It's filled with evidence-backed data, tips, and advice to help you go after the birth you want and achieve your VBAC. You can find the link to the course in the show notes today or type in the browser thevbaclink.com/vbac-class.
Okay, Miss Abby. Seriously, awesome. So excited. I know. Wasn't that so awesome? That was such an awesome review. I got it and I've just left it in the inbox unread because I'm like, that's going on next week's podcast. Like,
yeah,
it was so amazing. I was like, oh my gosh. And we love reviews. We love the reviews. So I always encourage people, if you know, maybe you don't wanting to drop it on the podcast app, that's fine. You can send it in an email, but we always would love a great review so we can read it on the podcast because it makes me smile so much. Like, so much. I remember when Julie and I were together, we would get a review and we would just be texting and just like our cheeks would hurt. They would hurt because we're like, this is what we're wanting to do. We're wanting to inspire and motivate people to find their options, right? Because so many people around the world feel that their options are taken away or that they are robbed of them. And that is not ever how we want anyone to feel. And I do feel like through this podcast, you get to learn your options and you get to kind of take back that power that maybe once was lost, right? Oh my gosh. Well, Abby, you guys, I tell you, she is just a ball of it all. She is involved in pregnancy and postpartum and pelvic health, writing in a book, like teaches classes. She works in the hospital system. Abby, you're just amazing. So I'm going to turn the time over to you. You're in Milwaukee. Is that right?
I am. Wisconsin? Yep.
Okay. So yeah, tell us a little bit more about, well, tell us it all. Share your story. I would love to know more about working in the hospital system and teaching birthing classes and stuff like that as well. And you guys, she does this all while having kiddos, little kiddos, and is expecting. So seriously, good on you, girl. You're killing it.
Yeah. I mean, I like to describe my life as beautiful chaos.
I love that. Yes. I just take that with me and be like, yeah, yes, my totally. Beautiful chaos. Yeah, that beautiful is what chaos. I live.
So yeah, I am a physical therapist and I specialize in pelvic health. So I've been doing that for almost 8 years. Yay. Yeah, crazy how the time goes by. And nobody at the time that I was going to PT school, like goes into PT school thinking they want to do pelvic floor. Yeah. Now people definitely do because it's becoming more common, which is just like been such an awesome progression in the 8 years that I've been doing this. But I was lucky in that I was able to do an internship in pelvic floor or pelvic health before I graduated, which again, at the time was super rare. So I've been treating, again, in pelvic health my entire career. So really now, though, my, you know, specialty or even my niche is, you know, pregnancy, birth, and postpartum, just because that's the season of life that I'm in and just like where my passion is drawn and just where there is like such a need. You know, I mean, I could for sure argue there's a need for all pelvic health, but there's also, like I said, that the field is growing. So there's a lot of other people doing all pelvic health and there's not quite as many people focused, you know, pretty solely on pregnancy and postpartum and, you know, just that specific time.
Yeah. And it's something that like, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day and I was like, this is what, you know how we have like this like 6 week gap, like that we like, oh, you have your baby. Okay. See you in 6 weeks. Hope you're doing okay. You know, like the two things that I wish that we could fill the gap with is mental health and pelvic PT. Like, right. And it just, there's such a gap that needs to be filled. And so it's so good to hear that there's a little bit more, like it's starting to come around where people are like focusing a little bit more in pregnancy and postpartum.
Yeah. And you know, I think, I mean, obviously I like have a lot of theories about different things related to like, how do we get here? But I just think though, like, you know, there's still this saying of it takes a village, but like a lot of people really don't have the village. And I think that that's what has created the gap. Like you used to have your, you know, other female relatives around who would make you dinners and clean your house and, you know, help you with your baby. Obviously, like a little bit, we just have to live in the reality. And that's why people need help and these services, because that's just not the norm anymore.
It's not. And we're expected to just bounce back, right? Yeah. Like, oh, you've had a baby. Okay, great. Keep going as fast as you can. Yeah. Like that's how it feels. We just had a mom hire us for 80 hours of postpartum. And I was like, wow, it's like amazing that you are focusing so much on your postpartum. And she's like, I want it continuous for 80 hours. And we're like, great. So we like made this work because her mom's from Korea. And she was like, people don't leave their bedroom They don't leave their bedroom. Like, they are with their baby recovering. And just like you said, like cleaning house, making food. But here we are. So many of our birthing, you know, stories, like they are couples and parents. They literally have to go back 3 weeks later to like normal life or work.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
I know. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's just, it's not normal. That's not how it's meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, I work at a hospital-based clinic part-time, and one of my projects that is just now really come to fruition. We're still sort of in the like pilot phase, but we're already seeing just really great results and like an increase in referrals. And, you know, again, just these are people we would otherwise have likely not seen.
Yeah.
And so the program is for a PT to see moms in the hospital before they go home, not necessarily like as a rule, not as like you can't go home until you've seen the PT, but, you know, just as a support service. And we've started it to, you know, be a standard or trigger a referral for anyone who's had a cesarean and anyone who's had a third or a fourth degree perineal tear.
Okay.
You know, I mean, obviously this is the VBAC link. So we talk a lot about like with a birth after the cesarean, but like, you know, a cesarean is a major abdominal surgery. And, you know, some people of course are expecting it and have been through it before. And that, you know, obviously makes it easier a little bit just because you know what is going to happen. But, you know, there's just about no other surgical example that you can compare to the care of a cesarean. Like, it's possible that you could have an appendectomy and see a PT in the hospital before you go home. Like, such a benign procedure, often done laparoscopically now. Like, there is just nothing that compares to the gap in care after a cesarean.
Yeah.
It's literally like, oh, we just cut open several layers of your body. You know, again, whether you were expecting it or not, you're also just recovering from being pregnant, from, again, if you labored at all and then having this major surgery. Oh, and, you know, you're going to stay here for 2 days or 3 days, but now you have to take care of this other human.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So like, but don't forget to take care of yourself. But when you're,
but also here's no direction about how to do that.
Exactly.
So I mean, and, you know, that's slightly not fair because I don't mean to imply that, like, you know,
they send you
postpartum nurses or again, like that, that's not that they're not doing their job or taking good care of you. It's actually that I'm making the argument that that's why there's room for this kind of program, because PTs are movement and rehab and recovery experts. That is what we do. That's what we're trained in. You know, all PTs graduating now are doctors in physical therapy. So, you know, I have a doctorate, like just like your dentist is a doctor. I am a doctor. And, you know, so it doesn't like I said, it's really an expertise in this area of care. And that's why we're just like the most well equipped to do that. So, yeah, I mean, and you don't have to actually even be like a pregnancy or postpartum or even really a pelvic health trained PT to do this work. You know, you could be a hospital, you know, based acute care or inpatient therapist that's sometimes called, because really you teach people the same sort of things that you would teach your other patients in the hospital, you know, just like early things about scar tissue healing and scar tissue work.
You know, massage,
how to lay flat in bed, because guess what, you're gonna have to lay flat in bed when you go home. But sometimes they don't even do that. Well, right, for sure, how to get up, you know, how to hold your baby when you walk if you're having pain, how to go upstairs again if that's painful, what to do, you know, just really practical things that people are going to have to do after, you know, they are discharged from the hospital and go home. And I just think it's like invaluable. And, you know, and then so obviously too, then part of our program is to at least get them scheduled for outpatient you know, pelvic PT as well. So just to make that transition really seamless. So yeah, it's been really cool. And so far it's going well.
So awesome. I hope that just all around the world that like a program like this can be implemented as a standard, right? Just a standard thing, because it really is, like you said, it's invaluable. And I also want to say, like, you know, my nurse and my doc sent me home with like a paper that was like, keep your wound this, keep your whatever, like stuff like that, like wound care and like restrictions of like, don't lift more than 10 pounds or don't lift, you know what I mean? Like this week and stuff like that. And that's so wonderful. But yeah, they're like, no one told me about the things I was going to feel or even encouraged walking. Like I actually,
or breathing.
Walking and breathing. It wasn't really encouraged. I was like, yeah, get up and go to the bathroom. But like, it wasn't like, get up and move as much as you can within a certain range in your body, you know, and that's going to help recovery and breathing and scar massage. Never, not once ever in either of my C-sections did anyone talk about the adhesions that could happen and the scar mobilization and things like that. And that is where, it lacks. We just lack so much. And so I would love to see programs like this happening all over the world. So if you are listening and you are in the medical world, this is something that you can try facilitate, because it is so important.
I'll send you some articles that are being published about it. There's just a handful of PTs who are really like pioneering this work. And again, like trying to get stuff published, because obviously that's how it works in the medical world.
So, just to have some
journal, scientific journal articles.
We'll drop them in the show notes too.
Awesome.
So yeah, so you've got the PT, you're implementing this amazing program. You've had a VBAC. Do you want to, you know, in the book, you talk about, and this is not word for word what you're saying, but like pretty much like recognizing your birthing plan and then also recognizing your birthing location and make sure that they coincide, that they match, right? Like, because if you are wanting certain things and then you choose, saying you're wanting an epidural, right? You're not going to go to the home. You're not going to have a home birth. Or you're not going to have a birth center birth or whatever. Or maybe you're like, I absolutely do not want to be induced with Pitocin. Like, no matter, I don't even want to be discussed. I don't want it to be discussed. Then a hospital birth may not be your best option. Now, I want to also say with that, sometimes, you know, it's possible to avoid that, but it doesn't always go super easy. It's oftentimes where you have to fight about it. So, I would love to know if you want to, if there's any highlights of your birth story or talking about birthing location and how it impacted. And you were induced with your first IUGR or was it preeclampsia? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a pretty common story. I was treating pregnancy and pelvic floor and postpartum, you know, before the, you know, first time I got pregnant and, you know, had taken some coursework about all this stuff. So I don't, you know, want to say that I was like cocky about birth, but I just like felt like I, you know, knew more, right? Than let's say like the average person, right? But as we all know, birth is a very humbling experience. So my first daughter was, I think I went to my like 38 week appointment and, you know, I had been measuring fine, like, you know, her 20 week ultrasound was fine. You know, I don't think I had had another one like since then, but you know, it was 38 weeks. So my OB did the like portable ultrasound to see if, you know, she was vertex and, you know, I don't even know. I really should probably ask her. She probably doesn't even remember at this point because my daughter's about to be five, but you know, she just like saw something that she didn't like and her suspicion, I don't know if that's a word, but was that like maybe the amniotic fluid was low, you know, or something, right? So she wanted me to have a real ultrasound, which I ended up doing. All the kind of those things came back fine. Blood flow was fine. My fluid level was fine. But of course, they, you know, measured her as well in the full ultrasound, and they said she's very small, you know, and we don't know why. You know, so that was their reason for wanting to induce me. So I actually, I mean, again, so just, I guess, being the stubborn person that I am, I was scheduled to give a presentation at the Wisconsin State PT conference later that week. And I was like, well, I'm not staying to be induced because I have this presentation to give in 4 days. So I'm going to do that. And then we'll talk. Like, I can't, I'm not having a baby then. Before then, like, whatever. So I'm sure my team already didn't like that. So I gave my talk on Friday, and then we, you know, went for the non-stress test on Saturday afternoon. And that's when they told me, like, yeah, you should stay and be induced. So, you know, I was really not, like, you know, super early or anything. Like I said, that was
2 weeks.
Yeah, that was a Saturday. So she would have been like 39 weeks on Monday, I think. But really, I mean, my induction story is just that my body was not ready. I mean, I tried to do everything I could to make it slow. It just, like I said, I mean, that's just really what it comes down to. My body just was not ready. I did not progress. I was doing all the things that I know how to do and teach people to do.
Right.
But, you know, at that time, it just, because I hadn't gone into labor myself, you know, she just was nestled in there. And, you know, I obviously have some qualms about, you know, this saying that you hear a lot, well, like, at least you have a healthy baby and at least, you know, the mom is healthy, right? Like, that should be the low bar. Like, that's the minimum. That's not the, like, goal, right?
I have feelings towards that comment too.
Yeah.
I want to be honest, I kind of want to punch people.
Right.
And when they say that, because I'm like, yeah, duh.
Right.
Duh.
Right.
Yeah.
So the, you know, yeah, I just, like, the birth itself, you know, again, was not, like, necessarily traumatic in that I did actually choose, like, I mean,
yeah,
you know, they were like, okay, like, I guess you could keep going. Like, I'll let you do this for however many more hours, but, like, you know, this is just, like, we're not getting anywhere.
Yeah.
So I was, like, tired and just was like, okay, I'm just, like, ready to meet her. Like, let's have this experience. So it wasn't like, you know, she was in distress and they, like, rushed me to the OR, you know, it was, so not an emergency in that sense, but again, just like, this is going to happen, whether it's right now or in a few hours. And then it would probably have been more of an emergency thing because of their, you know, just as a timeline of how that goes. So, you know, I would say, like, my trauma from the birth was more just, like, mental and emotional. So, you know, yeah, I mean, really from there, I knew I wanted to basically get pregnant again relatively soon. Like, you know, I knew we were going to, you know, as we were starting to grow our family, we were going to, you know, do that by several children if we could.
Yeah.
And I knew I was not going to elect to have a repeat cesarean. So, you know, basically my mindset was, well, I have to be somewhere where that's essentially not an option unless
it's an emergency.
Absolutely necessary.
Yeah.
So, you know, I made the choice then when I, you know, got pregnant again and my two girls, my two oldest are almost 18 months apart to the day. So also, like, about as close as you're supposed to have babies after a cesarean. And so I chose to have my care with midwives at a birth center in town, which, you know, is not an option for everyone because sometimes it doesn't exist.
I know. Yeah. So we've got states right now taking away midwives in the hospital even.
Oh, totally. Right. Like, that's all kinds of crazy. And I'll get on that fight, you know.
Yeah.
So now I'm pregnant again. So we're expecting our fourth in July. And so I'm still with the midwives at the same birth center. So, you know, preparing for my third VBAC.
Yay.
Even though I've now had two successful vaginal deliveries, I'm still like, I'm always, yep, considered always a VBAC patient. Yep. Which is just, you know, I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, it's not crazy. There's obviously like, it's a definition, but still it's just crazy.
But it's weird that to there's think, like risk
associated with it. Yeah.
Yes.
And so that risk, I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming that this is just like the, you know, insurance that my midwives use, but their insurance company charges them $1,500 just for accepting a VBAC client.
Are you serious?
Right? It's completely insane.
Oh.
And so that's new. Like it wasn't, that wasn't true for my last two. It, you know, it's new for this one. Yeah. And yeah, so that's crazy. It's like I said, it's a definition, but it's always going to be with me no matter how many children I have. Yeah. And I just think like that's sort of one of the things of like informed consent too. Like you just don't realize how that's going to affect you. You know, anyway, not that again, I would have chose differently in the moment, but it's just, like I said, just things that you don't think about and you don't realize are, you know, going to affect your childbearing experience for then the rest of that time.
Yes. And on the other end, affect could potentially affect a provider's like ability or choice to accept, right? Like these midwives could say $1,500 a person, like we can't, we're not going to do this because we don't want to up our prices, or we can't pay, or we can't take, you know, whatever this, we can't take the risk that the insurance is putting on us. Not that they're scared of the risk of birthing, you know, out of hospital with a VBAC, but like that could change. That could impact things so much as well.
Very much.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Makes me sad.
Yeah. So, I mean, when my kids are, you know, maybe a little older, just after I have this one and can like think about things after that, I'm going to, that's my next thing. I'm going to need to get embroiled in the like legal battles of this and just be like, this is totally ridiculous.
That is what I want to do. Like if I always say like, I have like a bucket list of like, if I have all the time in the world, you know, like I have these bucket lists and implementing, there's so many things surrounding and it's birth. It's where I'm at in birth. Right. And I'm even done having kids, but as a doula and stuff, I'm seeing this as listening to these podcast stories. I'm like, we need to make change. And I would love to start facilitating more change in policies and things like that. So one day when I have all the time in the world, that we'll get together again. Yes. Mm-hmm. We'll get together again and start making some change. So, I mean, we are moving in a forward progress. Like there's change happening. But okay, I'm going to bounce really quickly back to some PT really quick. I would love to know any tips that you would like to share with our listeners. You mentioned like, yes, we're the VBAC link. So we're talking about birth after cesarean, but what kind of PT things can we do prior to? Because I know for me, I didn't even think, it didn't even cross my mind that I should consider a PT, a pelvic floor PT before giving birth.
Sure.
And then, of course, after having my cesarean, again, I told you, like, there was nobody to tell me anything about anything. And then here I go and have another cesarean, right? And then even that, I still didn't. So I had two cesareans and not knowing anything. So any tips for previous and or after that you could give anybody?
Yeah. So, you know, really in my ideal world, every person sees a PT in her first pregnancy. And the reason for that is because your body, of course, just has to make these natural changes in your posture. You know, your various muscle groups have to change to accommodate the growth of the baby. That changes your center of gravity and center of motion, which affects how you move in all aspects of movement. Again, like I said before, like, PTs like me are the experts in movement. And, you know, again, it's not to imply that there is, you know, that somebody currently is not doing their job, but nobody else is looking at that. So right now I would say, you know, providers, I would, you know, would just say are generally pretty good about you know, offering a PT referral. And again, with things like social media, you know, people are advocating for themselves, you know, better as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're pretty good about putting something in, like if a patient raises an issue, right? Oh, I'm having this back pain, or I'm having pubic symphysis pain, I'm having hip pain, I'm, you know, I'm having bladder leakage, you know, whatever, right? X, Y, Z things. And again, you know, yes, if you have some, if you are experiencing some symptom in your pregnancy like that, that you think could be muscle or posture related, you should see a PT. But like I said before, I really think that everyone deserves that consultation because, again, the natural changes that are happening are natural and we're not going to stop them, but I can teach you strategies to mitigate the effects of that. You know, how to consciously, how to use your abdominal muscles and the connection between your diaphragm and your, you know, deep abdominal muscles and your pelvic floor and your glute and you know, how are you sitting at your desk or how are you standing? How are you, you know, and starting those things when you're pregnant, then carry over to how you move postpartum, you know, and obviously postpartum is a lot, you know, is hard for a lot of reasons, but to also have pain or, you know, these other symptoms in, you know, any bladder or bowel, pelvic pressure, you know, sort of symptoms, it's just going to make it harder. And so, you know, again, I really think by learning about these things consciously and applying, you know, specific strategies, you know, even if you're the pregnant person who is exercising and runs, you know, right up until the day she gave birth, like that's obviously wonderful. And I fully support you. And, you know, again, maybe it's just this one time consultation, you know, sometime around, I usually say like the beginning of the third trimester is a good time to do it. You know, you meet the PT, we talk about these strategies and things to implement, you know, for the rest of the pregnancy. And then now you've met that person and you've had a relationship with them. And now that's, you know, so you at least have a resource then postpartum to be like, oh, you know, Abby mentioned like this could happen. And guess what? It's happening. Now I know, now like, I'm just going to call her and get on her schedule instead of like, you know, Dr. Google in the middle of the night when you're nursing, which, and all this XYZ stuff comes up.
Which, you know, a lot of the times it says it's normal. It's normal to have these things. It's like, normal. Oh, well, duh, you just had a baby. Yeah, it's normal. But it's like, no. And two, like I want to talk about like before, I just want to mention, I guess not talk about, but I want to mention there are ways like athletes, right? Like sometimes athletes, we have these tighter pelvic floors and we need to actually learn how to calm and release for effective pushing. So we don't have more damage. And so one of the big things that I think is really good, like you said, even if it's just once, is coming in and learning about your pelvic floor, your actual pelvic floor, not just the pelvic floor in general, your pelvic floor, and learn where you're at and do some practice pushes and do some, you know, learn some breathing techniques and learn what's normal, learn what's not. So you're not on Google thinking that your uterus is falling out. You know what I mean? Like, it can go that extreme where you're like, I'm having this, you Google it, and it's like pure panic, which is not going to help anything. It's not going to help recovery. Yeah. It's not going to help our mental health. It's not going to help breastfeeding if you're breastfeeding because we're stressed. I mean, it's crazy how there's a cycle, right? It's a domino effect. So yeah, I think it's so, so important as well. And I wish I would have known that. Like, I wish I would have known that. And I did that with my son, with my VBAC babe. And there was a lot to learn.
And, you know, I mean, while I'm like so grateful when I, you know, get clients that are done having children and they're like, I'm finally like prioritizing me. Like, I've been having these symptoms, like since I was pregnant or since the birth of my first or whatever. Like, I'm like, yes, good for you. Like, I'm so glad that you're here. But it's also just like, it breaks my heart because I really think that maybe the symptoms are not entirely preventable the dysfunction is not entirely preventable, but potentially it could have been less.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or again, like, you know, now these women have lived.
Yes.
What, you know, X number of years.
Yep.
3, 1, 3, 5, 10, 15, 20
I know.
Years. Yeah. And, you know, I just, like I said, I really think that early intervention is key. And, you know, again, the changes happen in your first pregnancy, even if you don't necessarily have symptoms in your first postpartum period.
Yes. Yes. And that's the thing. Like, is it possible to not have any symptoms, but to have some pelvic dysfunction or pelvic issues or scarring or, you know, like, especially with C-sections? Like, I have a friend that was like, I have never had a diastasis recti or diastasis. It depends on how you say it, right?
Yep.
I've never had pelvic floor issues. I've never had adhesions. I don't have adhesions. She's had, you know, multiple cesareans and says, like, I do not have adhesions. And I'm like, yeah, you probably do. But, you know, it's just like she says she has no symptoms. But then sometimes I wonder, I'm like, do you know what symptoms?
Right. Like, are you just living with things? Yeah.
Yes.
You know, and so it can, right. I mean, and obviously, yes, like that can definitely be true. The symptoms don't have to be so severe that they, you know, are really affecting your day-to-day life or quality of life. That's, of course, usually when people seek care, when they're just like so fed up with it. But, you know, that there can be sort of like sneaky symptoms, you know, or again, things that people view as just like not that bad, but that I would consider are not normal.
Right.
You know,
or
I mean,
it's just our new normal because we had a baby.
Yeah.
And we're being told.
I mean,
that.
Knowing where every bathroom is in the stores that you go to, like, it's actually not normal.
Yeah.
The fact that you have a map of where the bathrooms are in your brain.
Yeah.
You know, now again, the same argument maybe could be made for people who are potty training their children, but
right.
That's different. Okay. They're learning for the first time.
yeah. Or like the second you walk into a store, the first thing you say is, where's the bathroom?
I gotta go. Where's the bathroom? I gotta go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
You know, so like that's a symptom of, you know, again, and it doesn't have to be that way. You know, you can change that. You know, right. Again, I mean, this was certainly true for me, and I did lots of scar work and stuff, but like, I basically could not wear normal pants or jeans, definitely not jeans, you know, until like I was postpartum with my second, and that had like all been stretched out again and like was slightly less sensitive.
Yeah.
You know, so again, like, that's a modification that I made and that lots of people make, like, you just, you know, and that sort of becomes your new normal.
Yes.
And you just sort of forget about, but it's like, oh, well, I would just never wear jeans. Well, that's not normal.
But why?
Like,
is it
why?
Because you didn't want to, or is it because you didn't really feel like you could, or you weren't comfortable?
Yeah. Right.
So what types of signs would, just for our listeners, because sometimes, right, we're in the spot of like, do I have anything? You know, what kind of signs and symptoms are maybe one, like a sure sign of like, okay, if you are finding the restroom the second you walk into a store, this is a sign. Like, yes, 100%. Yep. But maybe, so what, maybe we'll go from like extreme, like guaranteed, this is a sign, to like more of the subtle hidden. Could this be a sign?
Sure.
Yeah. What symptoms and what signs would you say for people listening?
Anything obvious, any sort of daily pain, like just pain every day, anywhere, again, related to pregnancy and postpartum, hip pain, low back pain, you know, people will say SI pain, which is your sacroiliac joint. So the back, but the back, you know, lower down in your butt, you know, pubic symphysis pain. I don't know if I already said tailbone pain.
No, you didn't.
You know, so if you feel like you cannot sit on any surface for any given period of time, and it's because like your butt is hurting, again, not normal.
Or like even pressure, like you're like standing up. I remember like after I had my baby, I'd be like standing up and then I would want to sit. This is so weird, I know, but I would want to sit like on the corner of something, like right at like the vaginal opening to like support it and push up, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Or like feel my hand like, oh, I just like look like a little girl that needs to go pee. But yeah, I'm just pushing because I'd have this pressure after walking more than 30 minutes or standing more than 30 minutes. And then sometimes even just going to the restroom, I'd be like, oh, I've got some pressure there.
Yeah. Yep. So that's a common symptom of like the medical diagnosis we call pelvic organ prolapse. But again, it, and so if you Google that, it can seem like, oh my gosh, yeah, like things are falling out of me. Mm-hmm. But again, that's not necessarily abnormal, especially in postpartum, because all those organs were shifted while you were pregnant. So some of it is just them like settling back into place. Yeah. Some of it is that your ligaments are still relaxed from again, what your body does in order for us to have babies. And some of that for sure continues postpartum, especially if a person is breastfeeding, that laxity. But again, so it's just, it's like learning strategies about how to help that. So certainly, pressure, heaviness, you know, again, any obvious bladder and bowel stuff, like if you for sure had to go change your underwear and pants after you sneezed, again, not normal.
Not normal. Yes.
You know, even, you know, if you're a year postpartum or, you know, 6 months, a year, 18 months, 2 years, 5 years, whatever, and you are one of those people that's like, oh, I can't go jump on the trampoline with my kids. I can't run. Like I had to stop running. Yeah. You know, that's, again, it's not normal. We can help you.
What about even, so inability to hold your core and like, because it's like a big plumb line, right? Like it's all connected. Yep. So if we have this ability to like, we had this ability to maybe hold a plank or run or ride a bike, and we were able to hold our core in and not feel it like release and start taking pressure in our back. But now all of a sudden we've had this baby and we're a year, 2 years, even 3 years or more down the line. And we're like, geez,
why do I still look pregnant?
Why do I still look pregnant? Yeah. Where are my abs? Why can't I hold a plank for 60 seconds anymore when I could hold it for 3 minutes? You know, would you say that's connected? I mean, I feel like I know the answer, right? But to your pelvic floor. Right?
Yeah. So that's, you know, you mentioned diastasis or diastasis. It doesn't matter how you say it.
I but know. Everyone says
that's
it different.
The condition you're describing, which again is almost everyone has a little bit of that. The last several weeks of pregnancy, because it's related to the baby growing, but it's really, it's a pressure management problem. And again, tissue laxity, muscle coordination problem postpartum.
Yeah. Well, and I recently was reviewing my op reports over some things, and this is something, so talking about cesarean, right? Like we don't think pelvic floor naturally because we didn't have the baby head come out of our vaginal canal, right? Yep. Like we don't think that. And we don't think abs as much either. I think a lot of the times, even though like, okay, we were cut down low, but sometimes I feel like our minds are like, I wasn't pushing and like using my abs in my cesarean. But listen, this is one of, and sorry, little disclaimer. It's a little aggressive.
Okay. I mean, all of pelvic floor therapy is TMI, and it's, you know, it's a no judgment zone and no topics are off limits.
Well, and I don't want anyone to feel
sometimes you just got
to
put it out there.
Yes. And I don't want to feel, I don't want anyone to feel triggered by the words that I'm using, because the words that I'm using are straight off of my op reports, but this is how they describe, this is my first C-section. This is how they describe things. It says the fascia opened in the middle and extended laterally with Mayo scissors. Fascia was separated from rectus muscles superior and inferior with sharp and blunt dissection.
Yep.
Rectus muscles were entered sharply and opened and then extended bluntly.
Yep.
So this is on And then a low incision was made above the bladder. So it's where they go on, right?
Yeah.
But like I was dissected.
Yep.
Bluntly with sharp scissors.
Yep.
Right? Like my abdominal muscles were literally stabbed and cut through. As I've been reading this, I mean, I am 9 years. Okay. So this was my first C-section and she's 11. 9 years ago tomorrow, as of this recording, is the anniversary of my second cesarean, the birthday of my second cesarean daughter. And I'm like, okay, here I am. Okay. Yeah. 11 to 9 years later. Yep. And I have abdominal issues and I have pelvic floor issues and I'm working on things and I have pain with intercourse sometimes that I would have never related to my pelvic floor, right? All of these things. And then I read this and I'm like, well, no flipping way. No wonder I have a diastasis recti way above my belly button because it was manually cut with sharp scissors. And so I want listeners, I want you to know that if you had a cesarean and you're not having any pain, that's wonderful. But that doesn't mean your body hasn't received trauma, right? Mm-hmm. Like this, it means it has. If you've had a cesarean, it has. And you may benefit from pelvic floor more than you ever know. Pelvic floor PT, like you may benefit more than you will ever know. And if you haven't learned about scar mobilization and things like that, it's time. It's time to learn about it. So yeah, any other symptoms? I know we're cutting short in time, but any other symptoms that you would say, listeners, if you're experiencing this, go check out your local PT.
Yeah, I mean, it can be things like your C-section scar can cause shoulder pain because of that word you used, fascia. Fascia means connective tissue. It's basically the thing that connects the whole body. Any good pelvic floor therapist is going to look at your whole body, going to look at you from head to toe. You know, people typically, you mentioned pelvic floor tightness can have jaw pain, feet issues. So like plantar fascia issues. Again, there's that word fascia, right?
Fascia,
like your pelvis is in the middle of all these areas. So it's a highway interchange for things to happen. So again, you might have sort of a like collection of weird symptoms that you maybe didn't put together as
related
to pregnancy and birth and postpartum. And maybe you're even seeing another PT and you've made some progress, but you know, there's still like, again, whatever sort of issue, like, you know, it might be worth it just to, again, have a consult and have that area checked out.
Yeah.
Or just be looked at from that perspective.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Such good information. And always, women of strength, remember, you never have to deal with this. You can take care of yourself. And I encourage you to do things for you. Like Abby was saying, like, she's like, yay, you're finally coming in. You're finally taking care of yourself. But dang it, it's taken so long, right? Mm-hmm. And I am guilty of that in so many areas.
Yeah. And again, like that's not your fault though, right? Like, just like I said, it's a problem with our, healthcare system. And again,
informed.
It's not even the individual provider's fault, but that's why I'm working so diligently and passionately to make it more of a standard, because like I said, I just think, everybody deserves this care. Really, again, just because you were pregnant, it doesn't even really matter how your birth went. How it went will mean different things, will do different things and address different things, but some of it will be similar because, again, the common denominator is that you were pregnant.
You
grew a baby in your body.
Your body changed. Your body made amazing changes and did an amazing thing. And it is okay to give back to yourself And thank yourself, thank your body for doing this amazing thing multiple times for a lot of people, right?
Yep.
It's so important. So, oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much for sharing these tips and a little bit about your story and choosing our birth location and all the things.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I didn't really even get to my VBAC story, but you can read it in the book.
Yes.
Just pick up a copy of the VBAC book.
Baby got VBAC right here. You can find it in our show notes today. You can find it on our blog. You can find it on our Instagram highlights. You can Google it. We got it right here. Yes. Baby got VBAC. It's an amazing one. So thank you so much. And good luck for this amazing journey, this next VBAC, your third VBAC. And yes, thank you again.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I could talk about this all day long. So
right? We could have hours and hours of podcasts. We'll just have to have you on again after your third VBAC, and we'll just share
sounds good.
A little bit of each VBAC now that we know, right?
Sure. Yeah, that would be great. That would be great.
Okay.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Tell us about your experience at thevbaclink.com/share. For more information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, and Julie and Megan's bios, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.